Hi, everybody. This is Once Upon a Time, episode 112, Skin Deep, written by me, Jane Espenson, and we have Bobby Carlisle here with us today doing the commentary.
Yes, you do.
Welcome.
This is, I love this, the entrance of Rumpelstiltskin in this scene. I just thought it was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, this was fun to do, and it was fun to sort of hide that we're doing Beauty and the Beast and let people gradually figure out, like, hey, that looks like Belle, like she's holding a book, like, and then we eventually he says this beast, and then we realize this the handsome guy's been Gaston this whole time. I like this reveal. And that's Emily DeRobin as Belle.
She was great. She was absolutely great from the first day. I enjoyed working with Emily. Wonderful.
And just the notion that these two are Australian is so hilarious to me.
Yeah. I didn't really notice that till on the day. It's like, oh, they're both Australian. That makes kind of sense, of course.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, I named, yeah, great reveal of Rumpel.
Full of cheek.
This character that you've come up with, Bobby, is so amazing. The way he speaks and moves is so unique, and so you can't look away.
Well, thank you so much for that. It was a real chance, really, from the pilot to attempt to play it like that, because it was a really beautifully written thing and character, but I didn't really know how he was going to look, how he was going to sound. We knew we didn't want to be a kind of gnome, that was for sure. But I think with what I've done with it, you know, I've spoken about this before, but it's based an awful lot on mask work that I did back at drama school. When you work with masks, it kind of frees you in an incredible way. It's almost, and the contact lenses on the eyes even add to that. So I'm kind of hiding myself inside all of this stuff.
Wow.
And so that combined with Italian commedia dell'arte, high-end farce, and the way that I strike these poses with my hands shooting up in the air and all of that, this is exactly what that's about. And the thing, the thing that completed it was the voice, and it genuinely does, a bit of it comes from my six-year-old son.
Really?
Pierce, yeah. Because he was always wandering around the house going, ebony, ebony, ebony. And I thought, there's a tone in there that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll play with that. And that's what came out.
It's fantastic. And it's really fun to write toward. Because it's one of those things, you know, I wasn't here for the pilot, but obviously they wrote these lines originally not knowing how they were going to be performed, but now that I'm writing them knowing how it'll be performed, it's so much fun to hear it in my head.
Uh-huh.
I hear your voice as I'm writing it, and that just
of course,
that helps
of
so much.
Well, of course, because I also thought in the first you know, few episodes, I always imagined you guys back, you know, in LA, seeing this stuff going, what is he doing? I didn't expect it to be like that at all.
Oh, no, well, I don't know what the reaction was during the pilot, but I assume it was unmitigated glee, because it's absolutely perfect. I know every time we watch the dailies down here, this is one where we would watch the dailies come in every day for this episode, and we'd watch them in the lunchroom and just enjoy it. Oh, just now you saw the Game of Thorns on the side of the thing, and that was the thing I sort of hesitated to put in for a minute, because I wrote an episode of Game of Thrones, so it's sort of a reference to me, and usually on a lot of shows, you don't want to sort of reference the life of the writer, in particular something that's written not for the network that we're airing on, but I thought, what the heck, it's a funny joke, I'm going to put it in, and that's been one of the things that people have enjoyed the most when people just send me a comment, is that they always love that Game of Thrones.
It's amazing what they pick up on, though, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
You can't hide anything at all.
Oh, no, it was, I sort of knew they'd pick up on it. It was never supposed to be like, this will be a private joke, because I know
sure.
How carefully people watch these.
It's there. There she is. There's my nemesis.
These two
love
together.
Lana. Oh, we're great. I love Lana. She's just great.
She's amazing.
We have a lot of fun.
A show to have two villains is such a wonderful indulgence. Not enough shows do that.
That's true.
You can support two villains when they're doing different things with different motives. Sometimes they're on the same team, sometimes you don't know. It's great.
It's fantastic, through the internet and Twitter and all of that. With Gold, they still don't know whether he's good or bad.
Yeah, well, I think
despite the fact that in this episode, you know, later we see him smashing someone's head in with a cane, they still don't know whether he's good or bad.
People instinctively want to like him, and I think it is helped by the fact that we do have Lana as a villain, Regina's a villain, so people aren't used to thinking of there being two villains. They want to make one of them a hero.
That's she's so bad, I think they like the fact that Gold takes her on.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's they're on his side during those moments.
Yeah, enemy of my enemy. By the way, David here is reading Anna Karenina. So he's having this affair with Mary Margaret and reading a book about an affair that ends tragically. And I love the line. Yeah, he says, like, I can't wait to see how it turns out. Like, he hopes it has a happy ending, which it does not. There is a train. There are bad things that happen at the end of that movie.
See, that's these are the things that I would miss. For me, when I watch stuff, you know, I especially, you know, like this, I'm just looking at the eyes. That's all I look at.
Really?
I don't look at anything else. Nothing else. That's all I look at. And I hear it really clearly, I think, because of that. It's all about belief for me, you know. But, I mean, not just this, in any piece of drama, any film. I'll watch it like that. I'll watch the eyes, because then that's if I believe it or not, I can see it.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. There's no problem in this show. They're all real, very believable, all real.
And this is Jesse Schramm there as our Cinderella. One of the finds that we made during the course of the year.
The gorgeous Megan.
Gorgeous
Megan. You look at someone that looks like that, and you can sort of think, you can build up a picture of what you think she's going to be like, you know, and nothing could be further from the truth. She's just an absolutely beautiful person. Oh, she's so lovely, Megan. From Victoria Island.
Yes.
Victoria went on Vancouver Island.
That's a real find when you find a local Canadian, because obviously we cast a lot of roles out of Vancouver where we shoot, and so there's sort of an assumption that, oh, if you get local talent, maybe they won't be as good as fancy talent that you cast here in LA and ship up there. And Megan proves that's not the case, that there's someone that extraordinary that was a local hire.
Oh, she's terrific.
She's great. And in a later episode called Red Handed, you get to learn more about Little Red Riding Hood's backstory.
Yeah.
And it's that's another one that I wrote that I was really happy to get to do.
Mm-hmm. It's Mr. Gold. Pink house. People have not picked up on that as well. Why is Mr. Gold's house pink?
It is interesting. I never even thought about that.
No. It's from pink from the outside as well. It's
yeah.
Solid pink.
Where are you taking?
A lot of what you're seeing here has been tightened. You just
mostly my pauses that have been taken out of the match.
There was this long walk to the door to this dungeon that got cut down. And you actually saw her walk past a piece of, looked like sheepskin, in a couple shots ago. And that was the fleece, the Jason's fleece from Greek mythology. And there was a whole story about it later in the episode that got cut out.
Yeah, that's right. It's in the beginning of it's like the scene when they sat down together on the table.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah, they talked about all the things in the collection.
Yeah.
And here you can see more.
This scene, I really love playing, because you know it's I don't really like sitting down. I don't like it. I like being up. And so when I do, it tends to make you an observer, you know. But in this instance, it was perfect, because this is the kind of moment for me where he kind of discovers something, some attraction towards this person, and he's fascinated by her, and it was lovely to be able to play that. You see it in my face.
Absolutely. I can see everything in your face. I see everything you're thinking, and it's fantastic. And yeah, I think Rumpel sits in a very active way.
Yeah, he's not sitting down for too long.
Yeah. And the cut between Rumpel and Gold is always really fascinating. Because you can see, you're right, it's in the eyes, like it's and not just the contact lenses, like you can see that you're a different person here.
It's funny when you get the script through and you read it like that and you see it cutting between Gold and Rumble Stillskin, you can see how it's not going to work. Once you're playing it, you forget about that entirely. Well, I do. You forget about it. And it's only later when you actually see the episode aired that you realise that you're cutting from yourself to yourself
right.
at times, which is very unusual. but somehow in this show, it works so well.
Yeah. Always between the fairy tale counterpart and their real world counterpart, I love that when we go from one to the other.
Yeah.
By the way, this earlier scene.
There's the fleece I get behind.
Yeah, the fleece, and you can see other things in the collection and other shots. There's a wizard hat. I wrote wizard hat in the script, and a lot of, whether or not that is the hat from Fantasia or whether that's the sorting hat from Harry Potter is open to the viewer to decide.
I was never keen on that hat, to be honest. On the set, I was always saying, get that away, get something else, looks a bit more. It looks like Mickey Mouse's hat, didn't he?
I get you. It's a different tone. Yeah.
It's a different thing entirely. There it is, there's the fleece, and there's the lasso. I always thought that was Wonder Woman's lasso. when she fell down from the ladder into my arms when the curtain gets pulled down, I really liked that little moment. There's a really kind of startled look in my eyes, you know, when Rumpel sees the light coming and he's home for the first time. And of course, that human touch is the last time Rumpel actually had a human touch like that. So it's a big moment. I'm sort of come up with ideas to Eddie and Adam for things to put in Mr. Gold's pawn shop. I think might be quite interesting.
Yes.
I thought Paul McCartney's Rickenback in the title might be quite an interesting one.
I would remember that.
Just propped up against the wall. Just don't ask any questions. Although he's been passed here at some point.
Oh, I'd love that. This show is the kind of show that has that kind of anarchy in it where you can do stuff like that.
Yeah, sure. And I think the longer it goes on, you know, well, here's hoping we have a long run, I think, you know, people may come to expect that, they want to see that.
A lot of people who are listening to this commentary will be listening to this commentary like 10 years from now, and they'll know whether or not we've had a long run. They know stuff we don't know yet.
That's true. At this point, they'll be saying, ha ha, Carlisle, or not.
As we are recording this, we don't even know officially if we have a season 2 or not.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So they know, they don't know more than we do.
It'd be very grand.
This is a scene that where the top of the scene was cut off, where she commented on the golden fleece, and there was an earlier scene that got trimmed down in which she actually made an escape attempt, and we see that
that's right.
A dove arrived with news that the battle had been won, that she had successfully saved her people, and while Rumpel is distracted, she runs out a door and runs in another door right back into the room, and you realize there's no escape.
That's right. She can't get away. The dove's was interesting. That took about 2 hours.
Yeah.
To get that thing to land on my finger and then it's cut.
Such a shame. Yeah, there was a whole dove motif in the original draft. The first shot of the episode, the opening shot, is a messenger dove battling its way through a storm to get to the castle with the news that the neighboring village had fallen. And that was a difficult CGI task. And then we lost the dove here. And in Storybrooke, we see that the thug that Gold has working for him, his nickname is the dove. And so he's supposed to, yeah.
That's right.
But his part was also largely cut, so there was a huge dove aspect of the story that went away.
Lovely big guy, lovely big chap.
Yep.
9 feet tall. A real scene like that to me. I love this scene. I really, really like this scene. It's really beautiful. I think that's why, because there's a lot of air in this scene, you know, in between, you know, what we're speaking about and stuff, and I think that's why the other bits were cut at the beginning and at the end.
Yeah, we tried very hard to cut from the storybook part of the story and preserve as much as we could on the fairy tale side because it's just so beautiful. And And it's a love story, and it needs a little bit of time and space for us to believe they're falling in love. So I was glad we were...
That's the moment. But yeah, and my reaction with my hands here, I'm not going to like this. And so it shows how happy he is. So when he claps his hands together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy.
Love it.
Beautiful. And this again was another one where you got to sit down here in this scene. And the same thing, you know, got mesmerised by Emily's, like, she's really beautiful in this scene, and everything she was saying and doing, I just believed every minute of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely, lovely to watch. You know, it's such a lovely actress.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. And I love that what she's saying is fascinating, and you listen to it and believe it. At the same time, she's holding this rose that we know is her fiancé.
You know, I made a decision actually in one of the takes. See when she puts the scissors up here and she cuts it there. I made a kind of like that, and a little kind of thing, and then I put my hand up and went, nah, like that. So don't worry. And I decided against it in the end because I thought I wanted to keep the focus on her and him and what was happening.
Oh, that's so funny though.
I should have done it in one take, you know,
mm-hmm.
in one take.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, give us the options because you never know.
Poochie.
Yeah.
I think in that instance it was. I mean, I'm always, as you know, Jane, as well. I'll add things and I'll put in a deary
mm-hmm.
here and there, and if it,
mm-hmm.
it's appropriate. But with things like that, I'll never take it away from what's actually supposed to be about.
That's fantastic because I'm sure you know had a long career and worked with a lot of people, and it's interesting what you see when you get in and start going through the takes, and this is always spot on. Look at that.
Absolutely in love there, totally. That's
yeah.
what I mean, just to keep that moment of love.
Yeah. Letting her go away. I'm really happy with this. The theme of this show, that this episode, actually changed in the writing of it, which is very unusual on the show, because normally the guys know exactly what the episode's about, and you go in knowing it, and it never changes. But this one started out being about Rumpel chooses power over love. And then we sort of realized during the writing of it, as I was going through drafts and talking with the guys about it, that that's what Rumpel wants to think he's doing, but really it's about that he doesn't think he's lovable or worthy of love. And it just kept getting deeper and deeper as we worked with it.
Yes. And you know, through the net and Twitter, I get such beautiful comments from people kind of hinting that they love this episode so much because it's proof that they could be loved.
Wow.
I think, oh man, you don't realise the scope that these things actually have, and the depth and the feeling that people have for this when they watch it.
It's
they really
okay.
They identify with Rumpel, they identify, you know, they feel ugly, they don't feel loved, they don't feel wanted. It's an amazing. I've never expected that, Jane, in 100 years to get that kind of reaction.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I still get emails and stuff from people who say, if it wasn't for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I wouldn't have made it through high school. And it's like, characters that are struggling and persevere are so powerful to people. I think probably more people identify with Rumpel than with Charming. Because, you know, the people go through that emotion that we're talking about, that Rumpel's going through here.
Plus, Josh Dallas is just a big lovely anyway. I love Josh. Josh and I got on very well, I should say. We really are.
But we have this amazing cast. There was a whole sequence that was lost in that place of Rumpel misleading Emma, sending her on this wild goose chase, or not Rumpel, Cold. And then when we actually got into the editing room, you always learn like stuff you need and stuff you thought you needed, and then you realize, hey, it plays without it.
Yeah, then the talk is so rich.
Mm-hmm.
So rich. There's the horrible cabin. This is really, I think we cut away and come back to this. I'm speaking about it in a minute, maybe, but this is a tricky old scene to play that was. I love this. I love Lana in this when she arrives. It's just magic.
I agree. The first draft, this was the two of them in the carriage, like that she ends up inviting her into the carriage, and then we learned that that carriage is not big enough for two people. It's a one-person carriage.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we had to move it out, which actually...
One person with a big dress.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, we can't fit someone in there with two big dresses.
Big hair, a lot. Mm-hmm. Everything's big jewellery. No, I just thought it was lovely. And I know about Scott, I can't believe I haven't mentioned all the way through, Milan Taylor, who directed this. And
yes.
I have to say, you know, I've been very fortunate in my career to have worked with some, you know, top class, world class directors. He's up there. He is absolutely, I would say, the best director on television I've ever worked with. And I think you can see it here, particularly in this scene. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I agree.
Tremendous. So lucky to have that kind of talent, you know, steering everything and guiding it.
And let's also talk about the costumes on this show.
Absolutely.
Oh my God! Look at the queen. Every outfit. I had a young actress who was a sort of an LA style expert. Like, she's one of the trendsetters around Hollywood. And the first thing she did was send me a message saying, "Where did that umbrella come from? The queen's spiderwebby parasol here."
Absolutely. Even
yeah.
that, it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Eduardo Castro, fantastic.
Yeah.
And his right-hand man, Mitchell, who makes it all. Fantastic team they are.
And the way that he will echo the fairy tale without just cribbing from it. So Belle's costumes in this that are clearly inspired by the Disney version of Beauty and the Beast, but without just feeling like it's a Belle costume for Halloween, you know.
Exactly. And there is, and also in the makeup world, you know, a little thing that I do, and it was my own decision, is that gold makeup, eye makeup's quite heavy. But that's me trying to echo the Rumpelstiltskin thing right there. So that it's not, you know, that's the one connection between gold and him visually to look at, is run about the eyes.
Really? I didn't know that. I never know. Well, it's well done makeup then, because I assumed that was, as you know, maybe she's born with it, maybe it's Maybelline. I assumed we were born with it.
No. I wish I was.
And that we just saw him running down the stairs. She's coming back, and he runs down the stairs. And that was a shot that I thought we were going to lose. I knew right from the beginning, are we going to spend all the time to do a big setup to just get you running down the stairs? And
yes.
I was so happy when Milan reported that he felt that was an important enough scene. We were going to fight to get it in the...
So interesting you say that. You know, my wife, she loves, absolutely loves the show, and my kids. Well, I've got three kids. My two older kids love it. My younger one doesn't really know what's going on yet. But she noticed that, they're running down the stairs, but it's one of the first things she mentioned, strangely enough. She said, I love to be running down the stairs.
Yeah, it's so out of character. What would make Rumpel run down a bunch of stairs all in a panic, out of breath, and it's like, love.
That's it. That, see, that moment there, that look, I was pleased with that. That sort of look to the right. Don't do that often when you're that close to someone. You know what I mean? That's really close now.
Yeah.
It's hard to focus when you're that close, you know, but that's what makes this kiss work.
So lovely. The women across the world melted for this kiss. Like, I think the unlikely love story is so much more powerful, you know?
Yeah, but is that it? That's that, I guess.
And
yeah,
like,
you're right. Powerful. Yeah, dear, lost it. Never, briefest moment.
Yeah, if you just believed it could be true.
Yeah. It's there's a little bit that was cut out before the scene with that the mirror being covered up. When she says to him, "That's what all the mirrors are covered over in this place. You think you're uglier than you are," and he says, "There's other reasons why a mirror might be covered."
Yeah, it was too bad to lose that, but you know, it works just like this.
Sure.
This way the audience gets to be smarter, and the audience gets to go, oh, of course, look at that, there was a mirror under that, and he knew the queen could see it.
Yeah, all along.
Yeah.
I was this, I was really, really aware and we're hurting Emily here. See the shake here? I mean, I don't lose it, but you're in the moment, you know, and you suddenly realise your fingers are gripping really tight and arms like that. I remember that. Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you sure you're okay?
And speaking of hurting people.
This scene caused me a lot of heartache. It really did. I had to really, really think about how to get this to work.
What was the heartache? What was?
To get from, you know, being lucid, talking about exactly what he wants, giving what I need, into the moment where he starts to lose it, hitting him with a cane, saying, my fault, what do you mean, you lost her, you whatever, you know, later on in the scene. That was really, really hard to achieve, and I changed it by echoing him saying, it's not my fault. That, and it wasn't originally a goal's line to say, what do you mean, my fault? That was my change here, and that gave me the platform to play this. So if we can hear him saying it. Fault coming up with them.
There you go.
My fault.
Yeah, good change.
You talking about my fault? And he goes back to the past there, to fairy tale land in that moment.
Yeah.
But that, it disturbed me for many reasons, because I'm very, very aware of our audience, and we've got family audience and we've got kids and stuff like that, and I did say to them, look, I cannot do this, you know, 100%, that, believe it or not, it's only about 50. Because it would be too much. I don't want to alienate any of the kids.
Of course, and there was a lot of caretaking and editing that too. That kept getting cut and recut and recut to remove the number of impact, you know, to soften the sound and the visual of the impact for the same reason. Now here, Emma has obviously figured out where Gold is, and the audience never questions. How did she know where he was? That whole sequence that explained how she found him lifted right up.
You know, that's true. I never really, maybe because I'm in it, I knew. It's true. I had never thought of that. There's no real explanation.
She's there.
The chipped cup.
It's interesting, you know, we're doing this based on fairy tales, but for most Americans, probably most people worldwide, the version they know of these fairy tales is the Disney movie version. So a lot of things like the chipped cup aren't from the fairy tale, they're from the Disney version. And luckily, we're ABC, we're Disney, so we can do that, which is great.
Well, a blessing, which is great.
Yeah, it's amazing that they let us take these characters. This is fantastic. We hear Cinderella drinking in a bar.
With Snow White.
With Snow White.
You don't see that every day.
No, just every Sunday.
That's true. Jessie, she's great. She was, I love working with her as Cinderella. She was that, and Price of Gold.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice episode, and I really enjoyed my time with her.
And we get to see her prince, also known as Prince Charming, I think, in some versions.
That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Red Riding Hood.
Red Riding Hood, three.
It's like a beginning of a joke.
Yes, it is.
Cinderella, Snow White, and Red Riding Hood walking at a bar.
So funny.
These are all lovely lads, him there. Have a nice boy from Australia, I think, or maybe New Zealand. Probably insulting them, isn't it? Yeah, another Aussie. Another Antipodean, shall we say, in the show.
I was going to say Antipodean, and then I got self-conscious about my pronunciation of it.
Girls' night.
David? What are you doing here?
I needed to hear. And I wanted to give you your Valentine's Day card.
Check it.
I'm talking to heartbreaking. I love this scene. I love watching these two together. They're really quite heartbreaking.
They really are. Like, he's too
cold
beautiful.
Is not
oh my God. And when he makes this mistake, I mean, you really feel how the curse has hit Charming, that he just, every time, he just keeps messing stuff up.
The wrong card.
Wrong card, the wrong choice, the wrong decision, that just over and over.
Just sad, isn't it? Such a moment that you can identify with, though, the wrong card.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I've ever done the wrong card, but, you know.
Yeah.
I can certainly imagine.
Happy Valentine's Day. And this, yeah, this, again, one of our most love-centered episodes, although many of them are, to end up, when we realized this would be our Valentine's episode, we decided
right.
to lean into that.
That's right, that's right. It was just the day before, wasn't it, or something like that?
Maybe a couple of days before, yeah.
Yeah.
You got a funny definition of lucky?
You have a funny definition of justice. What did he really do?
He stole.
That reaction is a lot more.
There's the cabin in the woods. You know, that you see later on, I think, in episode 19, you realise behind that cabin there's a beautiful little lake. Absolutely glorious. And in episode 19, they lit that incredibly well. And then the lights bouncing off it and smoke and stuff, it just looks magical back then. You realise it's a really magical place, Gorm's Cabin, the time you get to episode 19.
That's cool. Yeah, the Gorm's Cabin is also the cabin that Charming and Snow stumbled into when they were caught in that storm, when they were trying to let the dove go. That cabin is right at the center of a lot of stuff. Look at how ridiculous she looks here. I mean, she's so beautiful, is what I mean by ridiculous.
No, absolutely, of course. No, she's just perfect there.
Yeah. It's,
I really like this scene as well. It was lovely. It's a lovely emotion in it. And she comes round to the front, you know. She's very hard not to cry. I think I did, actually. I don't know if you see it, but I think I had a little tear in my eye when she's, just when she leaves, you know, the second time.
I had a fan ask about the fact that the tea set is there in the cell
yeah.
with her, and they said, what was the scene where Rumpel brought her the tea set? What happened between them?
Yeah,
and it's like,
no,
we never wrote that scene,
no.
But don't you want to know?
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Of course. Because there was actually a shot at the end, again, when she leaves for good. I put my head down and I looked down towards the cup and had a shot from that wall was flown out and a shot from that side looking back up at me looking down at the cup. It's something that was just again too long.
Yeah, I think it was we're going to use it as a transition, but then we did some reordering maybe. I know, I remember the shot you're talking about.
Yeah, and that was why the cup was there.
Mm-hmm.
I got it for my other reason.
And also because she has this line about you're going to be left with nothing but an empty
that's
heart and a chip cup, which I didn't write. I think Eddie probably wrote that line. That was in one of the final rewrites.
Uh-huh.
And it's lovely.
Oh, it's the almost the line of the episode.
Yeah, that's right.
It's funny how that happens. I don't know about that.
Yeah, so often the thing that you thought was at the heart of your story, the line that you knew could not be cut, ends up being cut. And it turns out it was like a bay leaf. It was a little flavor element that you needed to get the script going, and then at the end you pull it out and you don't serve it. And sometimes it's the reverse, the line that's added at the very end that ends up being the heart of the episode. There we go. Oh my God.
That's what you said.
Yeah.
Time when the eyes opened up, there was a wee tear after that. They cut it.
Yeah.
Which they did. Don't care for emotion.
And here, this is classic Espensonian writing where we stop to talk about a pastrami sandwich for a while. For some reason, I love writing about food. It humanizes everybody.
I love that Espensonian. I really like to use that from now on.
Okay.
The Espensonian feeling. Is
mm-hmm.
yeah.
We see Henry. Henry for the only time in the episode.
What a good little kid he is. But
he's earned a break. He often is doing. He's often carrying whole episodes, which is a lot.
I know. And then he's got his trailer to do schoolwork.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's in prison. I like This was one of my, again, so far, one of my favourite scenes that I've played so far.
This couldn't miss. The two of you talking through bars, like, this is going to be great.
Yeah. And it's often the case, you know, I directed in the theatre for many years as well, and I know it's the case that two people have got to get on really, really, really well to be able to play something like this, because you trust each other implicitly. And I know that's maybe a difficult thing for people and maybe not actors to understand, but trust is everything in a scene like this. That you're not trying to outdo one another, you're not trying to kind of outscore each other. And if you don't get on and you get in a scene like this, that's what can actually happen. But this works because there is none of that going on. It's just, it's a dance. It's a beautiful dance, this is.
That's fascinating. Well, it certainly plays.
Yeah. It's just because we know each other so well. We know Lana and I. It's just really lovely.
And I wasn't sure this was going to work because I knew the audience knows. The audience knows Rumpelstiltskin. Mm-hmm. Of course they do. So how much suspense can be built up in her getting you to say it? And yet it totally works because there's a frisson that happens when you really actually admit it. That's crucial.
And the audience, they want me to say it by then.
Mm-hmm.
They want to hear it, I guess, by then.
Yeah, they're falling off their couches, leaning forward to get you to say it. Yeah.
In the moment, between the bars, go for it, wait till the camera moves, say it. No.
Yay! Her reaction's so good. It's not overdone. It's just
things like that. You see that kind of hostility.
Now a lot of people have asked, why didn't you just say, "Please give me the cup"?
See, this is the thing. I mean, I don't really know.
I think
you forgot. Damn, I remembered.
You forgot. My personal opinion is that magic comes with a cost, even in Storybrook, and you can't just be throwing that please around. You ask for something you want that much, and you use a please on it, there'd be a cost.
Well, you know, in episode 20 we've just played there, I actually do say the line to Emma when she said about... She's asking me to take on Regina, and she says, "You're the only person I've seen take on Regina in one," and he says, "That's because I know how to pick my battles."
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly what we just
said. Exactly right.
Chooses,
you know, when you can use the please and when it's too big an ask.
Choose his moments.
Yeah. A beautiful musical score there.
That's lovely. The music as well. It really, really lifts. I love a score. I love a beautiful score. Any film or any TV piece is so important.
I also heard from a fan who wanted to offer her help instructing you on the use of that wheel, but it looks to me like you know what you're doing.
Well, you know, there's two really lovely people who come and help us every day, and they sit there on the green screen stage all day. And they wind up the wheel and they put it back over the wee spindle, and it's great. And it's actually, I love the moments just before the take when I'm standing there. Just it makes a lovely noise. It's very hypnotic. You can understand why. I can see myself getting one for home. Spinning in the arm for the children's balls or something like that.
Oh, how funny. I would love it if you did that. Just take up spinning as a hobby.
Take up spinning. Of course, I mean, it's amazing the whole notion of the spinning wheel and what it meant to people, you know, back in the day, and how important it was to be able to know how to do that was a big, big thing once upon a time.
Once upon a time. And here, the fact that she can just walk into your house, I think, is so interesting. It raises all sorts of interesting questions for me about what the relationship has been with Rumpel and the Queen.
See, we talk about that a lot as well. We've always been getting on there.
Mm-hmm.
What's been happening with Rumpel and the Queen?
Yeah.
This scene really broke my heart. It really, really did. The double look in my eye at the end when I say, just before I say you're lying and then we're done. That's real. I'm really, really choked up.
Mm. I think the fact that he believes her without any evidence says so much about what his expectation of what the world is going to hand to him is.
Yeah.
That it doesn't occur to him that it, that that it's not true.
Absolutely. There's the hat. Mickey Mouse's hat behind the glass.
Oh. Yes.
There is.
Yeah, there it is.
This is it.
Kills me.
It's the moment. Lovely big house, isn't it? Beautiful big house he's got as well.
Yeah, absolutely. and not real. One of our...
none of it. None of it is actually there. The table and the chairs is there.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
People may find that hard to believe, but it's really true. Those were green screen walls. There was
nothing
there.
Nothing there. The door's there. That's
door's
the real
there,
door.
Yeah.
The door's swinging. It's on a frame. But there's nothing else.
Yeah.
Cabinet's obviously there.
Mm-hmm.
The glazers had obviously been coming in and repaired that for him.
Right. Yeah, we never see them.
And there's the grill.
There's the grill.
There's the real grill. The rumble.
Fantastic. Oh my god. Oh, you kill me. Too good. And then this coda.
Oh, I love this. Beautiful.
A lot of young people probably don't even know what we're referencing here, but I recommend you rent Cuckoo's Nest and check it out.
You know, I directed that twice in the theatre, believe it or not.
Really?
Back home in Scotland, yeah.
Can you believe this match for Nurse Ratched? I mean, this woman, it's remarkable.
It's absolutely perfect.
Again, the limited pool of Vancouver actors, it's just a smaller acting population that you could find a match that good. And then she's a good actor too, like she says.
You can see that, she's got some stuff there for sure.
Yeah.
Not just her face.
Yeah.
No, I loved it, I loved the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
The end of this scene. She's such a nasty piece of work. But hey, what's going to happen if Gold finds out she's in there?
I can't even, In this shot, I give credit to our director, that shot of her lips through there, amazing.
Yes.
And this reveal that you don't see her face for so long.
She's like a wee girl, isn't she? Look at her. Beautiful.
Wow.
Beautiful. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, for 42 minutes in total of TV, that ain't bad.
Thank you guys for listening to us. This was episode 112, Skin Deep, and we're so happy that you listened to our little commentary.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.